You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photo Bomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
I am so jacked up on donuts right now.
You texted me and you said, be ready to record as soon as I get some donuts. And I thought, what happened to the diet?
Yeah, well, Sunday's cheat day, bro.
Oh, so on the cheat day, we start right off. We go donuts for breakfast, and we just go full bore all day. It's not like, I'll just have a little something for dinner that's cheaty.
No, it's usually I eat about half a dozen Krispy Kremes for breakfast, and then I feel like crap for the rest of the day. So then it actually keeps me from eating anything else all day, because I just eat donuts until I feel nauseous.
You don't actually eat six Krispy Kreme donuts, do you?
I ate five this morning.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Have you ever had them?
Yes.
Coming straight off the conveyor belt?
Oh, sure. And if they're not straight off the conveyor belt, throw them in the microwave.
Right. I mean, they're like, there's one. It's at the end of my street, basically. It's like less than a mile away, and I drive to the Hot and Fresh 24 hours. It's open 24 hours. That's insanity. And I just
that's donut shops. That's why the whole cops eating donuts thing exists, is because you'd be driving home late at night, 1 o'clock in the morning, by the donut shop, and there'd be some cops sitting in there. And it's because it was the only place they could get coffee at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. And that was why, you know, the whole cops and donuts thing became a thing, was because donut shops were open 24 hours a day.
Do you want to know the saddest part?
I've already witnessed the saddest part.
I intended to eat 12. Like, I bought a whole box.
Just
for me. And then as I'm eating donut number four, I'm sitting there in my car drinking milk and eating donut number four, going with my wife and 2-year-old daughter just down the street. My pregnant wife and my 2-year-old daughter just down the street, thinking, well, I guess I should probably bring them a donut.
So we're clear. Did you buy more than 12?
I bought a dozen.
But then you decided, I'll pull over on the way home and eat all 12 of
these. I'm eating them in the parking lot of Krispy Kreme. I'm not pulled over. I didn't even get out of the Krispy Kreme parking lot. And here's the other thing. Krispy Kreme has a dining room. Like, they have tables. I don't want anyone to see me shame eating a dozen donuts by myself. So I just go do it in my car.
That's a problem. I mean, that's a problem.
Yeah, but they're so good.
What, were you supposed to be bringing the donuts home to the family?
No.
Oh, so it was just for you. You were just going for you. Yeah. It wasn't like you were eating their donuts. You were like, I'm getting 12 donuts. You literally ordered a dozen donuts just for yourself. And decaf coffee with Splenda. Yeah.
Like, you have the double quarter pounder, supersize that, large fries. Give me some. Give me a milkshake too. Oh, and that Diet Coke.
And a Diet Coke. I actually did that. Because I've been drinking Diet Coke since I was 18, and so I just don't even like real Coke. So I'm definitely guilty of the give me the biggest, most fattening thing you have in a Diet Coke.
Yeah, well, that's another story entirely. I just wanted to sort of share that with you, that I am experiencing some physical sensations of if you never ever eat sugar or carbohydrates, and then one day a week you just eat a dozen hot Krispy Kreme donuts, it's not a good feeling.
I want to say that even if you do eat sugar and carbohydrates, if you eat a dozen Krispy Kreme donuts, it's not going to be a good feeling. I don't really think that you need the qualifier. Yeah. I think a dozen Krispy Kreme donuts is a hot bomb mess for your bowels and body, no matter what your situation is.
Yeah. I've got some GI issues.
Yeah. There's going to be some GI issues.
Just headed my way. The thing about going into Krispy Kreme is that it's early morning on Sunday morning, you roll into Krispy Kreme. It's not all kinds of people. There's two kinds of people. There's just there's like the divorced parent with their three kids.
Right.
Who's
right.
Taking them somewhere fun on the weekend. And
I've got the kids. I got the kids for the weekend. I'm taking them to Krispy Kreme.
Filling them up with sugar and before I give them back to my ex. And then the other is just a sad, lonely fat man. And that's it. There's just two types of people in Krispy Kreme donuts on Sunday morning. Sad, old, fat, lonely men and people with their kids, divorced people with their children.
No joggers with their headband and their fanny pack who stopped off for a quick
not a lot of fitness buffs.
Let's jog up to the Krispy Kreme.
Yeah, all the people working out at the CrossFit place across the street. Yeah, yeah. They put a big tire over their head, run across the street, and then eat a donut.
That doesn't happen.
No, it does not. So what's going on this week?
I'm going to boycott the CBS television network.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, I'm going to boycott them.
Is it because
of
Star Trek?
Yes, it is because of Star Trek. This episode comes out on Monday, but we're recording the day before on Sunday, and today is the day that the new Star Trek series debuts, and this pisses me off even worse. They are debuting it on network television and then moving it to their new pay-for service, and that really pisses me off. Because if you're going to play that bull where you put it over on the pay service and now I have to pay to see it, that's fine. But don't give me the first episode to hook me. I mean, it's good business, but it still pisses me off.
Like, well done, but real.
Well done, Star Trek heroin pusher. Yeah. Here's your first taste for free. Yeah. I'm not. I'm going to watch the first episode, and then I refuse to. I'm not paying for the service. Why would I pay for the CBS All Access service? I get CBS for free. Other than Star Trek, why would I pay for it? You know, and they say that they're just trying to, you know, Netflix is doing so well with this and Amazon Prime. And that's fine. Now, if all the networks want to do this, then I'll be more than happy to cut the cord and just pay for the ones I want. But they're not all doing it. So right now you're still paying for cable and you're paying for all these services. And I just wish that we would go one way or the other.
I had heard that they were going to put that out on Netflix, like a new episode each week, but you could stream all of them on the CBS service. I don't know.
Oh, I haven't heard that. I do have a Netflix account.
I knew I read that somewhere, but yeah, I guess it is a little. It is a little depressing. Oh, and outside of the U.S. and Canada, Netflix will have it, but not in the U.S.
Well, of course not. Yeah, because screw us.
Yeah, it's only made here.
Yeah, and we're the base. We're the base of what. Hey, you know what I was thinking about today too. What I was thinking about this week. Do you have any little thing or piece of equipment that you own, that you love, but you never use it? Because I have this thing on my desk I bought at Imaging USA 2 years ago, the Loom Cube. Have you ever seen the Loom Cube?
Yeah, I've seen you with it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little super, super bright light, and it's a little tiny square, fits in the palm of your hand, and it's indestructible. And it's designed, I think, mostly for, like, GoPro shooters. And it sits on my desk, and I love it, and I can't come up with a good reason for it. I can't, I feel like I should have a couple of these, and I should be able to carry them with me with my little travel camera and do incredible stuff on vacation without care. But yet I don't, because the light's not, although it's bright, it's not soft. I feel like I'm missing something. It's like this little thing is so cool that there ought to be something it can do that nothing else can do, and I haven't figured out what that thing is yet. You know what I'm going to do, though? I'm going to go at Christmas, when we're going up to the mountains to stay in a cabin for Christmas, and I'm going to take it with me, and I'm going to take a little tripod, and I'm going to try and shoot the cabin at night and light paint it with this.
That'd be cool. Well, I think that according to the approximate size and shape of it, it looks like it'd be a dynamite thing for holding down pieces of paper.
It is. It is a wonderful paperweight. It is. But every once in a while, I'll just turn it on and brighten up the room with it. I'm like, this thing is so bright. It's so great. And I never use it for anything.
Yeah.
Like when you have a really good flashlight. This is the best flashlight ever, and you never use it. It's just sitting in a drawer somewhere.
I feel that way about my iPad. Like, I bought an iPad. I was one of the first, iPad adopters. I bought one right away, and I was really excited about it. And then after a few months, I just don't use it. Like, the only person in my house that uses my iPad is my 2-year-old when we were on a road trip.
I have a big pad, and I do use it every day, but only in bed, because I use it for reading. Because I read a lot of magazines. I have a account with Texture, so I have access to every magazine in the world. And it's great for magazines because the screen's so big. So you can pinch and zoom in on pictures and things like that. So I use it for that, but I don't use it out and about in the world. It's just too clunky. It's too big.
Yeah, I used mine to read for a while, and then I went back to just reading books.
Oh, you Neanderthal, you.
Yeah. I'm a caveman, that's for sure. Yeah, what are you going to do?
So I can't. I think it's so cool that I want a second one, even though I don't, I don't use the first one. I'm like, but maybe if I had two, you know, and I was thinking, what if I could come up with a monopod that was really thin and I could put this on the top and just jam it down in the sand and have it be a constant light source on the beach? Two or three of these, right? I could just jam them in, jam, and like two or three lights hitting my people on the beach from different angles. And I was like, well, no, that's why would that be better than just carrying one flash out there? It wouldn't be. I just think it's really cool, but I just don't have a use for it.
But it would look really cool for your wizard staff with the,
yes.
with the light on top.
Yeah. Walking around my staff with my light on top.
You shall not pass.
Those who call me
Tim. greetings, O Tim.
Greetings, O Tim. By the way, you know that that's a that was a faux pas in that show. In that
you're talking
that
about Monty Python.
Yeah, Monty Python's Holy Grail. When he asks him his name, and he says that his name is Tim. That was not in the script. He actually had a long name, and John Cleese forgot it and said Tim as a joke, and they kept it in. So here was the other thing that I was going to say. Oh, real quick, let me just throw this out to our loyal fans. If you know of a program that runs effortlessly on a laptop, like an older laptop, that would be good for previewing images during a live cell demonstration to your clients, please go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/photobombpodcast. And let me know what that program is. Because right now, I was using, what's the big one that everybody uses for in-person sales?
ProSelect?
Yes. I was using ProSelect. And then I lost it. So now I have to rebuy it. And it's, ProSelect's not cheap. ProSelect
no, it's
is
not.
over $300. And I don't do enough high volume in-person sales to really justify that cost. And so now I'm using Lightroom. It's an older laptop, which I just completely repurposed and cleaned and put a clean install of Windows 10 on it and put Lightroom on it, and that's all that's on it. And yet still, it will get slow because bringing the images up, it can be slower. And all I want is a program that just shows the pictures full screen on a black background. How hard is that? I don't need all the special gadgets and stuff. It's for weddings. When weddings come in, you need to show them all their images. I'm not building an album on screen for them. I'm not doing any of the stuff that ProSelect lets you do, and it's a lot of great stuff, and ProSelect is a great program. But I just need to be able to click through and show each image easily. And you'd be and I've looked. There really isn't anything that does that.
I think Fundy has something like that.
Well, there you go. And Fundy's, but what's Fundy going to cost me? You know, it seems to me I ought to be able to pick up something for $50. It just shows your images. You know, I mean, I even toyed with just using the Windows picture shower.
Fundy's a one-time purchase for the whole suite, and it's $399.
You know, $400, which is what I could buy ProSelect for that.
Yeah.
So it's been kind of annoying, and I think what I'm going to start doing is I'm going to take my images. I've just been loading them into ProSelect full size. What I'm going to start doing is loading them into Lightroom full size. I'm going to shrink them down. And load them in, because I notice when I'm showing pictures to my clients, it'll stall while it loads on the next picture sometimes. But then when I get to the photo booth pictures that I'm showing them, that's no problem. It's because the photo booth pictures are quite a bit smaller. So I'm just going to make a separate folder sized down so that I won't have the rendering problems. Or I could just buy a new laptop. That would probably solve my problem. if I was using a laptop that wasn't 4 or 5 years old, that probably would solve my problem too. But I don't want to. Because I don't use it enough.
You're so particular.
Well, I don't use it enough. You know, you reach a point. Here's the thing, and you know this. When you first start off, it's all about what you want. But once your business is rolling and going, the coin will flip, and it becomes, how can I spend the least amount of money possible? Because I want to keep every penny that I make if I can. You know, so you get to the point where you start going, I love this new light. This new light is so great. But if I buy this new light, am I going to make more money as a result of it?
And yeah, I think it depends on how long you've been making money in your business.
Right.
You know, because at first you're buying stuff because you have the necessity of, I need lights, I need backgrounds, I need this stuff. So you actually are buying just enough so you can actually do your job.
Right.
But I think once you realize that and you start really budgeting and looking at how much stuff costs and how much you get to keep out of what comes in, you definitely sort of will spend more cautiously when you're like, hey, I already have 12 backgrounds. I don't have to go buy this other one, you know.
Yeah, because it's so, I see a lot of people who do that, new in the business, and they get gear envy, and I want this lens, and I want that lens, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, I know somebody who's got a perfectly good Canon single-digit camera, and they're like, yeah, but I really want the 5D Mark IV, and I'm thinking, are you going to make more money if you buy the 5D Mark IV? Because I don't think you are.
Is it going to allow you to do something that you weren't already doing? Is it going to make your workflow faster and thereby make you spend less time doing stuff? I mean, there are always ways to...
Right. It doesn't have to be a direct monetary, because, yeah, there's other ways it can aid your business. If this makes things faster for you, then that can be an aid too. But don't get caught up in the I just want this because I want this.
Yeah. And so what are the best reasons for spending money on a new piece of equipment?
Number one, it's going to make you money.
Right. Okay, right. For example, let's say I bought stuff for a photo booth so that I can now sell photo booths to my wedding client.
There you go. Like, I have a $1,000 Dysub printer, right, which is in my photo booth, which I've been using for 6 years and has paid for itself, 10, 15 times over easily.
Right, but if that company comes out with a newer model, you're not going to rush to get it unless it makes prints twice as fast or uses less ink and saves you money on toner cartridges or something.
Yeah, and the one I have, it's been dropped. It's like cracked. It's tore up, but until it falls apart, I'm not replacing it because now it's a money making machine. It's the same thing with my car. My car is paid for, and so until I need to replace it, I'm not replacing it because once it's paid for, now it's basically generating income for you because you have to pay for it.
That's why I drive an 05 Corolla. Julie's grandfather is this old school Italian guy, and he's good with numbers. And he's 89 years old, and I was talking about getting a new car, because we could afford to pick up a lease or something like that. And I thought, man, it'd be nicer if I had a nicer car to pull up to and when I go to a job instead of my 05 Corolla. And he goes, what are you talking about? He goes, every time that thing starts up, you save $300.
That's true.
It's true. Okay.
But not to say that if you want a new car, you shouldn't get a new car, because you should get what you want in life. You only get one go-round. So I get that, too. Everybody has their areas where they're misers and their other areas where they are splurging. Like with me, a car, I'm kind of a miser. But then, say...
Sweet tea vodka, I will spend lots of money on that.
Yeah, or a hotel room, for example. I'll stay in a nice hotel. Well, my wife, for example, she has no problem spending money on a nice hotel. She likes a nice hotel. Whereas me, I don't care. I can stay at the Motel 6. As long as it's a bed and a door, lock on the door, I'm fine.
Yeah,
but so everybody's got their preferences.
As long as I got Cinemax, I'll
it
be
should
good.
Make you. Yeah, it should make you money. Or let's say it should make if it can make your workflow significantly less,
enable you to do the same amount of work in less time.
Yeah, which then frees you up to make more money in another way, or spend more time with your family, or whatever you want to do. Right.
Right.
So, that's where you get into, hey, sometimes hiring an assistant is worth every penny. Sometimes having someone else do your post-processing is worth, every penny.
Is there a replacement part? Like, because I bought the 5D Mark IV because I've been using the 5D III pretty much since it came out. I think I bought it in 2012. And so I had the camera for, 4 years before I bought another one, and my backup was a 5D2 that it was coming to the replacing shutters, replacing the mirror, like doing stuff, spending money on them, or do I upgrade to the new one?
Well, I think you already answered that question.
Yeah, I was going to be buying a new camera soon because you need, part of it is equipment-wise, you need stuff that you know is going to be reliable.
Right.
And
right.
So, if I buy a new camera every 4 or 5 years, that's probably pretty normal.
And I've been struggling with that because I'm probably due. I'm using a 5D3, 5D2 as a backup, and I'm probably due. But I'm hesitant to jump to the 5D4 because I'm halfway convinced that there's some really maybe wonderful mirrorless stuff coming right around the corner.
Well, yeah, I keep seeing stories that of an announcement. Although, speaking of which, in the news, I saw that... it was on Petapixel and DP Review that Nikon had said that they are definitely working on a mirrorless full-frame camera right now. And we have this funny story on in relation to Nikon and other camera news that we posted this week and got some funny responses from. Nikon is making a full-frame mirrorless camera. And this is translated from Japanese. So we had a good old buddy of the show there, Zach Thomas, message me to let me know that the grammar was bad in the sentence that I posted. And I said, this is copied and pasted from the article. It's Japanese translated to English, so I'm not responsible for that. However, basically, there's a Nikon rep that says about Fuji, Sony, and Olympus, there are no professionals using their products, talking about how it's going to make the first full-frame mirrorless camera that is for professional photographers.
In that market. I know lots of professionals that are using...
Yeah, I know. It's exactly the opposite of the truth. And so we had Bruce Press commented... That's the kind of thing you say when you just released an expensive DSLR that you want to sell tons of copies of while you scurry to get your mirrorless offering ready. Of course, professionals are using mirrorless. Here you go. Mary Lesh says, I shot Nikon for over 30 years. Nikon disappointed me at the last three Imaging USA conventions that I attended when they were a no-show. They don't care about their photographers. I am now shooting with the Olympus OMD-E M5 Mark II, and I have never been happier.
So, yeah, what is it with Nikon not going to Imaging USA?
I don't know what it is. There was always like a year on year off thing, and Nikon had a big presence at WPPI this past year, so they were there. So I'm not really sure. I'm not involved in anything to do with that, so I don't know. It is peculiar.
Because if you've never, for those of you who have never been to an Imaging USA, the trade show at Imaging USA is if you've never been. It's quite alarming when you walk into that room and realize how big it is.
It's robust.
Yeah, it's huge. You know, a Canon will have a giant booth, giant Canon banners hanging from the ceiling, and there's a giant Miller's booth, and there's a giant, you know, what's your company?
White House.
Thank you. There's a giant White House custom cover.
White House booth is two stories tall. They build a loft into the top.
Yeah,
of the
right. Yeah,
like,
right.
Crazy. I mean, there's some crazy booths.
Yeah, there's. I mean, it's like it's a big deal. First time I went and saw that, I was like, oh, I didn't realize that this was a like Comic Con. You know, this is a giant trade show floor with all the big brands here and cameras everywhere and live model shoots going on. And
it takes
huge.
All 3 days to get to all the booths.
That's the most fun I do when I go to Imaging USA. I'm like, I'm going to go walk around the trade show every day. I go walk around the trade show for a couple of hours, you know, and you'll walk it, and the next day you'll walk it again, and then you'll see stuff you didn't see the first time. You know, you can't take it all in at once.
Yeah,
and then you look around and you go, where's Nikon?
Yeah, it's bizarre. Yeah, I don't know. I have no information on that. I could not tell you. But I do think that it's a missed opportunity. Some of the companies, you know, if you think about it now, the different markets that are buying stuff, the United States isn't even the biggest market for cameras anymore, you know. For
anything. Like, anymore.
Like, if you look at it this way, movies will come out and they'll do very poorly in the United States, but then if they go in China, they'll do amazing. Like the Transformers movies and stuff. Like,
well, you really
movies
really,
that we hate and nobody wants to see.
Well, the World of Warcraft movie came out and bombed, and they're making a sequel just for the Asian market.
Right.
Because it did very well over there.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that's what I mean. Is like they're not just considering us, and it is Imaging USA.
And you're seeing in other areas. What was it? I started to watch some Tom Cruise's last Mission Impossible. I was on yesterday. I'm flipping through the channels, and if you look at the producers, one of the producers is an Asian film company. What was I watched recently? The remake of the Magnificent Seven.
Mm-hmm.
No coincidence that one of the seven was an Asian actor. That's not a coincidence. He's
in
there.
You're seeing that a lot more. Asian product placement and famous actors from the Asian markets showing up in American films and stuff because it's a big deal. Because
that's their market now. They're really saying that they're really making the films for the Asian market almost first. And the Asian market loves the Western motif, so they're still Westernized movies, but that's where the money is. And they say that most movies now, when they sell the distribution rights to Asia, it pays for the movie before the movie's even made. They sell the rights to Asia before they make the movie, and now the movie is fully financed before they even start shooting.
Well, you know, the I want to start a new segment, by the way, in the show. This is called Gary's Hot Stock Tips. Hot Stock Tips.
Okay.
Hot Stock Tips.
Hot Stock Tips.
I'm thinking of a way to introduce it. Yeah, I was just reading an article in Fortune this past week about Facebook is getting poised to move into the Chinese market. Because they have Facebook. Oh, China has their own social media platforms that they don't really use. They don't really have Facebook.
Really?
So, yeah. So
I knew that they censored some stuff, but I didn't know that Facebook wasn't even in their market.
Yeah. If China, that should be pretty pretty interesting. So if you own some Facebook stock, maybe hang on to it. If you don't, maybe buy a couple. And this has been Gary's Hot Stock Tips. How'd you like it? How was the segment?
I especially like the intro.
Yeah, well, you know, I do what I can. That's awesome.
I thought the intro was particularly entertaining. I had something happen recently when I was talking to a photographer about lighting, and we got into a discussion, and I realized that this particular photographer did not think or realize that light is additive. In other words, he said to me, when you're lighting someone, he said, you put the main light on them, and they say the main light is metered at f5.6, and then you put a fill light on them, and the fill light's going to hit both sides of the face, and the fill light is metered at, I don't know, 7.70 or something, whatever. And the main light side of the face is still going to be at 5.6. And I said, if you put a fill light on them, and you're adding more light to that side of the face, and so you're going to change your exposure. And he said, no, as long as the fill light is not as bright as the main light, it's not going to change the exposure.
Mm-mm. No.
And you have that moment.
This is a fairly tough concept for new photographers to get.
But you know, you have that moment where you begin to doubt yourself because the person seems so sure of it. And you're like, what? No, I'm pretty sure light is additive. You know, the more light you put on something, the brighter the something is.
Yeah, that's science. That's definitely science. Yeah.
Yeah, that's science. And I finally had to convince him. Light is
Are you
additive.
Anywhere near your lights right now? Okay, let's go ahead. I want you to set a couple of them up.
Yeah.
And let's do some science.
Yeah, let's do some science, and you can see this. And then I had another thing happen where I was talking to a rep for a lighting company that makes flashes, and we were talking about TTL, and I was talking about when you are using TTL, and here's a neat little thing for you if you're a TTL off-camera flash photographer. When you're using TTL flashes, say you have two flashes and you're shooting in TTL, these two flashes will fire at the same power regardless of where they are placed. So if you have the two flashes, what they do is they fire a pre-flash, they read the pre-flash, and then they both fire at the same power to give you the exposure that you're asking for. And it doesn't matter where they are. So if you've got them both the same distance from your subject and they fire at the same power, that's fine. And if you back one of them up, they will fire at the same power again. Now, it may not be the same power that they fired at the time before, because now you've backed up one of your flashes, so there's less light getting there from that flash. So it'll turn both of those flashes up a little bit to give you the same reading that it was giving you before. They'll both fire hotter. But what they don't do is fire at different ratios to each other. They fire at the same power. They act as one strobe that is in two positions. Are you following me? Is this making sense, what I'm saying to you, Gary?
Yeah, that's fascinating.
You look a little lost.
No, I was just thinking about something else.
Okay. So, but what this means is, if you take your two flashes and you put your main one at 3 feet off your subject, and you take your second one and you move it, your fill, and you move it 6 feet off your subject, they're going to fire at the same power. So now you've got a main and a fill, because your fill light is twice as far as your main light, and so it's less light getting to your subject. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I'll do is I'll put a main light on a stand, and I'll have my fill light on my camera, and then I'll make sure that I am back behind the stand, so the fill light is not putting as much light on the subject as the main, because they fire at the same power. It's as if they are set in manual mode and the same power setting. So if you just back up your fill light, you are now making your fill light less, you know, like a stop less or two stops less, right? And this person was convinced that when you move the light stands around, that the flashes would change power based on how far they were from the subject. And I had to explain, and he works for the company that sells the flashes, and I had to explain to him in detail, no, the flashes do not know how far they are from your subject.
Did you say, I don't think this means what you think it means?
Yes, I do not think that means what you think it means. No, the flashes do not know how far they are from your subject. But this is something I think people who work with TTL flash, when they start using two flashes, that they get confused by. They think that when you think you can move the flashes around, the flashes will change power. Yes, they do change power, but they change power together. If you move one flash, they both change power, not just the one you moved. Because the meter in the camera simply reads the amount of light on the subject, and then it turns those flashes up and down to figure out how much hits the subject. I've lost you now.
No, I get it completely. No, I had it 10 minutes ago when you started, but
Well, pardon me.
I'm just saying.
Pardon me. Let's talk more about the Asian film market.
I was just waiting for you to get to some sort of salient point.
My salient point is how many people think one thing about photography and are totally wrong about it, despite the fact that they're professional photographers or sell professional photography equipment.
That's an excellent question, actually.
That's my salient point, which led into a teaching moment, the more you know.
Wanted to take the long way to get there, but we're there now, so that's good. Like, we made it. We're here. Here's an embarrassing
Listen,
moment.
I think that's a great teaching, because let me tell you, in my program, when I teach that program, that's one of the things I talk about, and people look at me and go, what? I didn't realize that. Yes, every flash fires at the same power in TTL. Go ahead.
There are plenty of times I've had that sort of like a should have had a V8 moment, you know,
right.
Something new. One of the most embarrassing was, and I was relatively new in photography, was learning about manually selecting autofocus points. Like, I hadn't realized that you could control the point that your camera, your lens is focusing on. And so we were out with some friends, and we went to shoot clay pigeons at this gun range. And she had brought a camera to take pictures of us. And there were four of us. And I went to go grab her camera to take pictures of her husband while he was shooting. And I went to focus, and the focus point was like all the way to the side. I said, "What's? Oh my God, is it broken? What's wrong?" And then after 5 seconds, I go,
Did you admit that you didn't know, or did you just like, okay.
I don't know that I've ever told anybody that until right now.
Dodged a little bullet there.
It's like 8 years ago. Yeah, that was a wee bit embarrassing, and I've had many, many moments like that, learning things that I should have known that I didn't know, things that seem fairly simple. I mean, additive lighting is something that, when you're teaching studio photography, I think it's one of the hardest concepts to get over for new photographers. I was just at a friend's photography studio helping her set up her space and explaining this exact same thing to her about when you have if your fill light's at 5.6 and your key light at 45 is at 5.6 and you're reading those separately at 5.6 onto the subject, where both lights hit, which will be the lit side of the face, are going to be F8.
Right.
Once they will join up together and make F8, and then the part where that fill light only hits the shadow side of the face will be at 5.6.
Okay, so now, is that correct? Is that the correct math?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, because the math can throw you off, too.
Well, it's not that hard when you think about it. The numbers get confusing, like 4, 5, 6, F8, whatever. But it's
can we just, why don't we just start a movement to change that?
Can we just call it 1 through 10?
Yes. Can we just start calling it 1 through 10? Because it makes no sense that when you double your shutter speed, it's a stop. When you double your ISO, it's a stop. When you double your aperture, it's two stops.
Yeah. We should just do 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12.
And let me tell you, that's something that I didn't know for years.
What's that?
And then that I didn't realize that that your aperture, that going from 4.0 to 8.0 was two stops. I thought it was one stop.
Yeah.
If you asked me to explain it, because I never really looked at the numbers. I just clicked the clicker.
F-stops are difficult because the numbers are misleading.
Yes.
So you're like, you know, F4.0 to F5.6 is one stop. 5.6 to F8 is one stop. 8 to 11,
right.
You know. And so when you go from 8 to 11, the number goes up, but the aperture gets smaller and the image gets darker. So
there's two things wrong with it. One, that the numbers, when you double the number, it's two stops instead of one, whereas it's one stop with everything else. And two, the bigger the number, the smaller the hole. That always confuses everybody.
Somebody conspired in the beginning and went, you know how to keep people out of this profession? You make it hard to understand.
Yes, make it hard to understand.
Like, wouldn't it be funny? Like, what's the bell curve for difficult professions? Is brain surgery or rocket science?
Yes.
When everybody compares those two things, say it's not exactly brain surgery or it ain't rocket science. Wouldn't it be funny if rocket science was stupid easy, but they just have a conspiracy to make it seem really hard? You know? No, you just push this button, and it goes up, and it docks with the space station, and then it lands. It's fine. It's
really
literally
easy.
One button. It's easier than asking Siri how to find a McDonald's. Yeah, but no, we gotta pretend there's a lot of math involved, but it's super, super easy.
I don't understand why more people don't get involved. you push the button, rocket goes up.
Yeah.
What's to know? You know which way up is, right? How hard can that be?
Tell me, sir. Do you have a fifth grade education?
There you go. Because
I think you can do this job.
Yeah, so that would probably be the most embarrassing thing, is that I truly didn't make the connection on f-stop ranges when it came to aperture.
The biggest thing for me is that, you know, photography is, there's parts of it technically that get deep and difficult to understand somewhat, but it's not that hard overall. You know, and with the
Oh, yes, it is.
I don't think it is.
You really get into it. You start talking about aperture, f-stop, ISO, the exposure triangle, and how they work together, flash, fill flash, main light, ratios on the face, and then let's kick in posing and the S-curve, and the woman tilts her head towards the near shoulder, and all the other little rules. I mean, if we just sat down and made a list of rules, little rules, just little rules that you've heard or used in your career, I bet you that list would be 100 things long.
Look, I'm sure that your daughter could also list a bunch of things about Minecraft that would blow our minds that seem really...
Minecraft is hard! Yeah. Okay, dude, are you kidding? If you try to do what my daughter does in Minecraft, you'd never make it. You'd fail miserably.
7 and 8-year-olds do Minecraft. It's
because they do it, because like us, they do it every day, all day. And so they it stacks up. You learn it over time.
My point is that if somebody's really dedicated to becoming a great photographer, they can do so over a pretty short amount of time. I think you can go from I just walk around in automatic mode to I'm creating some really compelling images. I would say easily in 18 months you could
18
be,
so the fact that you think that's a really short amount of time, I find amusing.
I do.
Yes. I think you could do it in a year, too.
It's taken me 10 years to know which way to put my eye on the camera.
I think you could do it in a year, too, but that's not a short time.
I think it is.
You think so?
To
I
learn
think a short time would be a month that you could be, you know, you meet so many people and they've
to
got
master
to
master a skill set.
And they say, I love, nothing. Well, because they don't think of, most people don't think of it like a skill set. You know, like, I've got a camera. I love to take pictures. And when you say to them, well, you know, with a year of hard work, you might be able to take good ones. They go, what?
Yeah, no, thanks.
I take pretty good ones
selfies.
Now. Can't I just take a 2-week class and be there where you are? No, you can't. No. Because it is, you know, like I said, I think your definition of hard is, to me, to take a year to, yes, because we understand how hard photography
learning
is.
Learning Japanese would be hard.
Yeah. Yeah, because we understand how photography is. To us, taking a year would be pretty good. But I think to the average layman, they'd be like, really? Wow, a year is a long time.
I mean, how long would it really take me to be good at this?
I mean, doesn't the camera do most of the work anyway?
Well,
that's what they think, is my point.
I don't know. It does a lot. Like, it's kind of the point. It does quite a bit of the work, but not, you know.
Yeah, but then the thing I always get annoyed about is that everyone seems to think that it's still the camera and the settings and that's really the key, and they just totally ignore composition and posing and understanding
great picture that was really difficult to pull off under difficult circumstances, and then you show the client the camera, the photo in the back of the camera, they go, wow, that's a great camera.
Yeah, it's a great camera.
It's great.
Or seeing light. Seeing light is a big thing, I think. You know, there's a turning point for most people, I think, when it comes to, especially when you're working like a wedding, to where you get to where you just see the world in terms of where the light's falling.
Always. And once it turns on, it never turns off.
No, it never turns off. So, So I'm sitting at dinner last night with all my family at some fish restaurant. We're sitting there and some people are talking. I look over at them talking and I immediately zoom in mentally on the person who's got the short lighting on their face.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm like, that's my subject. If I'm going to take a picture of that group, that's the person I would focus on because they're lit the best.
Speaking of great lighting, I this is the things about never being able to turn it off, is that, you know, when you watch movies, when you're driving down the road, when you're sitting in a restaurant, you're always, like, mentally, without even thinking about it, you're always looking for light. And when you see a place with that's got really great lighting or a scene that's really well lit, you know, you just always notice it, and you always will forever once you get it. I just watched a movie on Netflix last night starring Natalie Portman and Ewan McGregor called Jane Got a Gun. It's like it's like an hour and 40 minutes, relatively short movie, Western, kind of relatively low budget, not a lot of big special effects, just a really, really well done, great little, revenge story Western. And it was lit and shot beautifully. And so if you like that, if you're into that sort of thing as an audience, get on Netflix while it's still on there and watch Jane Got a Gun. Really great little movie. And just the lighting is just delicious all the way through. And Julie's like, shut up, I'm trying to watch a movie. I was like, honey, but the lighting.
The lighting, yeah.
The lighting.
The lighting. I always do that when you watch like a procedural detective drama. And they're showing
they're in an interview room and it's lit with 50 lights
or whatever, or like they're just discussing something in the detective squad bay, and they're cutting back and forth between the close ups, and everybody is short lit.
Yeah.
And you're like, how is that possible?
With a hair light, you know.
Yeah, with the overhead fluorescence that you have in this thing. You know, when I was watching yesterday, the same sort of thing. I was watching the movie Fences, Denzel Washington's movie Fences, which is an August Wilson play that he played that role on Broadway. And most of the film takes place in a little yard behind their house. And it's so perfectly flat lit I'm trying to peek a look down the side to see if this is really on location or if they built this whole thing in a studio. Do you do that sometimes when there's an outdoor location in a film and you're trying to determine, is this really an outdoor location?
Yeah. Once you know the tricks, you imagine if you're a cinematographer or a set designer or a lighting person in the movies, and I know a few guys who do that type of work. You can't like enjoy a movie ever again, can you? Because you just look at it and you go, no, that's a set. No, that's
Because when they're in the backyard talking, and it's like this even flat light, and then he goes down the alley to the street, and suddenly it looks like he's outside. You know, the street scene, he looks like he's outside. Yeah. But then when he goes back to the alley, doesn't quite look like he's outside anymore.
Understanding lighting and knowing more about it can ruin a lot of film and television for you.
Yeah,
you really
I think
can't.
So.
Yeah, it's like that's perfect. You can see you look at catch lights, and so you can see in a scene where if you go to something like Law and Order, when you have the male detective, they light real harsh, and then it switches to the other side of the table. The female detective's got glamour lighting with a reflector under her.
You know? Yes, my favorite is when it's a close up of someone sitting in a car and talking, and you can see the giant softbox catch light in their eye. Mm-hmm. You know where. They're being lit, mm-hmm. You know, and how all cars in television shows seem to have a really bright light in the dashboard.
Yeah.
It just completely illuminates everybody that's in the car.
And have you noticed that people spend a lot of time who are driving looking at the passenger and talking? Have you ever spent more than a tenth of a second turning your head to acknowledge your passenger? Like you can, the panic that ensues if you take your eyes off the road for 10 seconds to talk to the person in the passenger seat. Anyway, so hey, I got a couple of I got a question come in on the old Facebook this week. If you want to address that,
go ahead. Yeah,
let me see where if I can find that again. Really good job, Gary, keeping up on this stuff. Ah, here we go. All right, so we got a message to the show from Leslie Evans, and she says, "Gentlemen, Messenger is down. This was big this week. Apparently, Facebook Messenger just stopped working all over the world for a little while, and." If people started to lose their minds. Says, can we talk about getting work on Instagram? I've come up with a wonky procedure. Photoshop, square crop apply logo, then upload to Dropbox. Grab iPad, screen capture in Dropbox. Crop out extra white space, then post. Every time I do this, I keep thinking there has to be a better way. Please.
Yes, there is. I can tell you what I do.
Like 100 of them. But yeah, let's go. What do you got, Boo?
Okay, so I create a Facebook. I create a... what I call a Facebook file in LuaPix Photo Fusion, which is a program I use for album designs and stuff like that. So I create a Facebook, after a wedding, for example, I'm going to do a blog post. So I'll pick 20 or 15 or 30 images from the wedding that I'm going to create, do use for my blog post. And then I make these smaller for the blog and I stamp them. And now I've got those smaller for the blog and I stamp them. Then I grab them and I upload them to Google Drive in a folder called Instagram Photos. If this doesn't work, if you're an Apple user, I'm sorry. I upload them to Google Drive. Because I've uploaded them to Google Drive, they are automatically going to show up on my phone in my Google Photos. So now, on my phone, every day, I'll go to Google Photos, I'll click one of those pictures, and I will send it to a little program in my phone called No Crop, which basically puts a square crop on it without cutting away any of the border of the picture. So if it's a horizontal picture, it can still go onto Instagram intact. So you just go, oh, share it to square crop. It goes to square crop. And you go from there, you go share it to Instagram and it goes to Instagram and you're good to go. And so like every day, you know, like in the morning or whatever, I'll just go to Google Photos and grab a new one, share to Instacrop, share to Instagram. And now there's a picture on Instagram and I'll do that over the course of 2 weeks, one picture a day or whatever from a wedding.
The fundamental problem is that Instagram is designed. They don't want any other programs to be able to post on Instagram.
And they don't want you posting from your computer.
They don't want you to post from your computer. They want the whole idea is for Instagram to feel like in the moment. And so they want that with your stories with and there are all definitely ways around it, but it's not designed to sort of and they really like people to do stuff with your phone. It's a mobile platform and they've always really really pushed that it should be a mobile platform, which is why that people have to go through hoops to figure out how to get the images from their computer onto Instagram, and so we're, some of us use these elaborate ways to do so. There are a couple of ways that I can tell you that are incredibly easy to do. Instagram does a pretty good job of resing down images, but you want to have a couple of things in place. One is you want to have an action to resize your images for Instagram. I find somewhere around 2,000 pixels at 72 DPI, they look real good, and you know, sharpen them. Whatever it is, your action to prepare images for the web, have that in place to save yourself a lot of time. Having an action to resize for Instagram is going to make it your F5 key or something and just make your life a lot easier. A couple of ways to really easily get images on your phone. If you're a Mac user and you have a Apple computer and you're using an iPhone, you can use AirDrop, and it takes about 5 seconds to just wirelessly put photos on your phone. So you basically, you open up a window in Finder, which is kind of the Explorer of the Mac world, and then in the left-hand column, along with all your other listed favorite files, by default, AirDrop is there. And if your phone and your computer are connected to the same wireless network, all you do is drag the files you want to, and it'll your device will show up right there in the window, and it puts them on your phone in about 5 seconds. So it's a really easy way, if you're working on images on your computer, save them, export them to where you want to go, and just drag them onto your phone using AirDrop, and it just takes a few seconds. And then you can make posts manually from there. That's a really easy way to do it. Now, the other way that I do it is I use a scheduling program, and there are tons of these out there, Hootsuite, Later, Schedulegram, all these other ones, where you can upload and create posts right on your desktop, which makes your life a lot easier. The thing is that most of them do not give the ability to post directly to Instagram from your desktop. There's not really a way to do that. So it sets up with an app on your phone that will alert you and let you know that you have a post scheduled, and then you tap a couple of buttons and it pastes everything into Instagram and makes the post. And it's super, super easy. And Instagram no longer has to be square. You can push a button and it will use the full horizontal crop. The only thing is vertically, if you put a vertical image, it's limited to a 4:5 aspect ratio. So it's going to be more of like an 8:10 vertical crop. Yeah. There are a couple of things I want to point out. Later.com is the one that I use to schedule my Instagram posts. And it is free to use up to 30 posts a month. And you can schedule posts as far out as you want. You upload the photos from your desktop to the website. There's no app. You don't have to do anything on your phone until the post is ready to go live. And you can schedule stuff out. You can save hashtags. You can and you type up your captions and everything. And it saves it all and schedules it out. And then your phone notifies you when the post is ready to go. And then you push the button and it posts it onto Instagram. It's real easy.
What if you want more than 30? What's it cost? You know?
I think I pay like I've paid for the pro version, and it's like $200 a year, and you can schedule as many posts as you want. You can also upload videos. You can run your Facebook and your Instagram from it. You can run a bunch of different social media accounts. It does quite a lot of stuff, which is very, very cool. There is one that somebody pointed out to me recently called Schedulegram, and what this one does, it is the only Instagram, I think, scheduling program that actually will physically post it for you. So you don't even have to post it. And Instagram does not allow other apps to post. And so what Schedulegram does is they have banks and banks of in a room of just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of smartphones all plugged in, and they program those smartphones with software to log into your Instagram and post your posts.
So that's quite the workaround,
right? It is a hard, but it works pretty cool. It's really neat. You can actually watch a little video on how they do it, and so they are still not violating the Instagram terms of service, but you do have to give them access to your Instagram account, which you'd have to do to any other platform.
What is Instagram afraid of? I mean, I know that I understand that when they first started out, what they wanted to be, but they have to understand that they're not that anymore. So why don't they just embrace it?
I don't know. I think that the thing is that all the social media platforms are starting to all pretty much do the same stuff.
Yes.
You know? And yes. So it's going to get really difficult for any social media platform to stand out from any of the others. They all have the Snapchat features now. They have the stories features. They all have the funny face filters. They all have different things that they do. And there's going to be almost no real reason to use one and not the other, which is why Snapchat and Instagram are solely on the mobile device, because they feel that that's the way to go, because as time goes on, people are spending more and more time on their phones and less time on their desktop devices, or interacting with social media more on their mobile devices than they are on a desktop. Even if you have to go and work on a computer at your job, you're not necessarily allowed to or going to be doing all your social media stuff, your private stuff on your company machine, you know, but you will be on your phone every chance you get, logging into your Instagram and checking stuff and your Facebook. So I think that it's basically they feel like they want to keep it a mobile platform and make and keep it more in the moment as much as possible. But we'll see where it goes. They've changed quite a lot of stuff since Facebook purchased it. So it's you know, it's
well,
a completely different app than it used to be.
You know, Godox has come out with that new trigger that will allow you to trigger all of your lights with your phone.
The A1. Yeah,
yes. So now you can set up a shoot and then using your phone take a Instagram picture with your lights.
Right. If you're using Godox flashes and you're taking stuff with your DSLR or your full-frame mirrorless or whatever camera you're using professionally, you can real quick hop over onto your phone, snap the same picture using all the same lights, and then it's on your phone with similar
right.
quality, similar lighting. You know, that's,
and go,
that's
oh,
cool.
You know, in purpose, you know, in process being done. But you have to use the camera app that's built into that comes with it. And then you have to, of course, set it up to the same settings as your camera is set up to.
Right. Right.
And you have to be shooting in manual mode.
It's still pretty neat. They actually are going out now. We talked about it on the show a few weeks ago that it was coming out, and it's actually out now. People are getting them in their hands, and I'm seeing photographer friends post the photos on Facebook of using strobe lit iPhone photos, and it's pretty impressive. It is pretty impressive.
Yeah, yeah. But I still think, you know, if you've got, but you know, most some. I mean, does the new Mark IV? You've got the Canon Mark IV. Has it got built-in Wi-Fi or whatever?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, you can also just shoot it with your camera and immediately send it to your phone.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I do that. I do that quite a bit with my M5. Has the same feature. And if I'm traveling, it's really great. The best thing is to be able to take a photo with a professional camera.
Yes.
Pop it over to your phone real quick so you can post it and use it on social media. We do that stuff all the time.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I do the same thing with my Fuji. All right. We need to wrap this thing up.
Yeah. Let's call it.
Okay, what's coming up? Well, I will be in Georgia at the end of this week. And if you are an FPP member, a member of the Florida Professional Photographers Association, the good folks in Georgia have extended a wonderful invitation to you that you can come to the convention in Georgia in Jekyll Island for free. Because
right.
the Florida convention was canceled as a result of the hurricane. So go to the Facebook page for FPP, and all the information is there, and you can come to the convention for free. Jekyll Island, Florida is where it will be.
It's just over the Florida-Georgia border.
That's right. It's,
so it's
not
close.
Far at all. I'm in Tampa, and I think it's only maybe a four-hour drive or so, a little bit more for me, 5 hours.
Yeah, for I can get there from Orlando in about 2 hours and change, yeah.
Okay, so there you go. About 4 hours for me. It is coming up September 29th through October 2nd, Expose 2017, and all the information you need is at gppa.com. And then,
it's
of course, coming in.
Beautiful place for that.
Oh,
event,
yeah.
Man.
Oh, yeah. It's on the beach. And then coming up in January 14th, 2018, Imaging USA, imagingusa.org, and I will be speaking there and hosting numerous programs and panels the whole time. And please come see me. Say hello to me at the bar.
And you are the voice of the Grand Imaging Awards.
Yes, buy me a drink. I am the voice of the Grand – I'm the face of the IPC and the voice of the Grand Imaging Awards and the left shin bone of the trade show.
And I'm the soggy left elbow of the official hotel bar.
Yes, all of my body parts are being utilized for the convention this year.
Fantastic. I have coming up in January, I will be speaking and judging and doing two programs for the Society of Wedding Portrait Photographers annual convention in London. That's at the Hilton London Metropole, right there on the Thames. On the Thames in London, on the Thames by the water.
The Thames?
The Thames. It's the Thames. It's the Thames.
Thames.
Thames. But
spell it. How's it spelled?
Thames. You're gonna start picking on how things are pronounced in the English language. By
no,
spelling?
I'm not at all. I'm just saying that I've always found that to be one of the more extreme examples of a word that sounds nothing the way like it's spelled.
You're such a phonetic for grammar.
I'm not really, but I'm just saying that word. I mean, there's lots of words that like they don't make sense. You know how they're spelled,
like laugh.
There you go, like. But Thames has always been a big one. It's like Thames so obviously shouldn't be spelled Thames.
Well, you know what are you going to do? They're British.
It's wacky British. There are those who call me Thames.
Thames? There are those who call me Thames?
Thames? All right,
anyway,
go ahead.
I got a. I should be going to some cool places this year. I'll be teaching in Texas and possibly St. Louis and Vegas. So more information, all that stuff coming up. Make sure that if you listen to the show, please, that you go on iTunes and you leave us a loving and supportive review so that we can go higher and higher up the photography results in the iTunes store and get more and more listeners such as yourselves.
Somebody wrote recently on Facebook, they were asking for what are some good photography podcasts to listen to. And one of the people commented, I don't really listen to them because they all just seem to be just platforms for these guys to try and sell me their stuff. And I was like, not us. We don't sell anything.
We are so bad at merchandising. Yes.
We don't sell a single thing. So if you're listening to us, at least we have that going for us. We may not be entertaining, but at least we're not trying to sell you stuff all the
time. Yeah, that puts us in a league of our own.
Yes, we are in a league of our own. A very poor league.
it's like the triple A league.
We can't even afford balls.
Like three people in the stands, real sad on TV.
Yeah.
You know, like we're like women's basketball.
Well, women's basketball is not that. The WNBA is going strong, isn't it?
Oh, actually, you're right. I'm women's soccer. Yeah, that's real bad.
When women's soccer doesn't get the love that it should get?
No, it doesn't. We have a great women's soccer team in Orlando, the Orlando Pride, and it's like there. Although we're one of the better attended ones, it's still like it's a 10,000 seat stadium with 1,500 people in it. You know,
that's a shame.
So that's okay. Like our podcast. You know, we could use a lot more listeners.
What they need are some good reviews on iTunes.
Yes. So please go review Orlando Pride on. Us, the Photobomb Podcast.
You can find us online, facebook.com/photobombpodcast. You can find our website at photobombpodcast.com. You can find Gary online at hughesforyourready.com.
Yes.
You can find me at bureperry.com. And you can send us email, questions@photobombpodcast.com. We'll see you back here next week.
See you later.